Monarch butterflies can't seem to stay out of the news of late. Often the news is upbeat, like last week when we talked to people encouraging other people to plant gardens friendly to butterflies and other pollinators. But there might not be so much activity to attract and assist the butterflies if they were doing better, and based on the annual Thanksgiving count, they had a bad year. The Thanksgiving count in 2017 in California brought in the lowest monarch butterfly numbers in 5 years, and that's despite counters going into additional areas. Let's learn more about the count and the butterflies. We'll be talking to the people at the Xerces Society, which monitors the fate of invertebrates. Based in Portland, Emma Pelton is a conservation biologist with the Endangered Species Program there. Hi, Emma.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Always good to have you here. Give us the lay of the land. Where do monarchs travel? And what you're trying to do is get a count of them while they're going from place to place. What are those places?
Yeah, so most people think of monarchs that go to Mexico and go to Michoacán, which is about 100 miles west of Mexico City, and they form massive aggregations, numbering in the millions. But on the West Coast, most of our monarchs go to the coast of California. So they go as far north as Mendocino County and then far into Baja. We actually had a great volunteer step up in Baja and do some organizing of volunteers this year. So they're in Mexico as well. So they're right along that Pacific coast. We kind of call it the Goldilocks zone, where they are able to avoid the freezing temperatures at night, but it's not so warm during the day that they're using up all their energy. So there are over 400 sites along the coast that we know they use, and they're kind of spread out all the way from that Bay Area down into Mexico.
And how long to make that trek from the places they're coming from, so up where we live, obviously, down to Mendocino and on south?
Yeah, so they can come from as far away, we know, as Idaho through tagging of monarchs. We suspect that they're coming all the way from Montana and more of those interior western states. So, you know, that's hundreds, if not thousands of miles for some of that area. And monarchs also breed year-round in California and Oregon. So in that case, you know, that's maybe a much shorter distance to travel.
All right. So not that. Is it a multi-generational thing, though? I mean, is it the same butterflies that go south and come back north, or is it that their kids or their grandkids?
Yeah, we don't know exactly how many generations. We're actually working on a project right now. We've got somebody driving all over the West every month to try and look at the demography of the population, which is our fancy way of saying kind of the structure of how many generations there are. So we know that there's a few. And we don't know if it's three or four or maybe even five or six in parts of California that have a really long growing season. But what's really unique about butterflies, unlike migratory birds, is that, you know, no one is teaching them this. The monarchs that show up in California, none of them were alive last year. So we fully don't understand what they're using. It's some combination of magnetism, the angle of the sun, to understand how they find the same, in some cases, the same branches of the same trees, even though they've never been there before.
Wow. So it's not just heading south because it's warmer there. It's actually going to the exact same places.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing. How long do monarchs live then, Emma?
So the summer generation, where they're having a lot of generations on milkweed throughout the West, we think they probably only live about a month. So they're pretty short-lived. But this migratory generation, as the monarchs are kind of emerging, becoming adults in August, maybe early September, depending on where you are, they make it, you know, all the way into February, March, April of the next year. So they're living up to 9 months.
Wow, okay, so a month or 9 months, somewhere in the middle. So yeah, basically, if you're beyond 3 months, you're considered a senior citizen for a monarch?
Yeah, you can tell if a monarch's old, they start to get a little raggedy. You can kind of tell. They're not quite as bright. They look a little worn, a little world-weary.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not surprising. Emma Pelton's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a conservation biologist with the Endangered Species Program at the Xerces Society based in Portland. We're talking about monarch butterfly counts, particularly the Thanksgiving count from last year, which showed some numbers that we'll get into in just a moment. Not good numbers. You can join us with this number, 800-838-3760 by phone with your questions, comments, and observations. You may have some monarch butterflies hanging around you and have some questions about them. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760 or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So the Thanksgiving count, what are the particulars on that, Emma?
So the Thanksgiving count is this kind of incredible testament to people looking ahead. 21 years ago, there was some monarch biologists, including Mia Monroe, David Marriott, and Dennis Fry, who all lived in California and were kind of going out on their own, looking at monarch aggregations along the coast and starting to compare notes and say, I think they're going down. I think we're seeing fewer butterflies than we used to. So this was the late 90s. So they kind of started to organize other people and said, let's make a concerted effort to go out and actually count these sites in the same time period every year so we can start to track the population. So they really had the vision to start this now running, you know, 21 years on, citizen science program. And this is well before citizen science was kind of a thing that we all get excited about. So we just celebrated the 20th anniversary last year, and we've now swelled to about 150 people that participate, and they spread out. And this year we counted a record number of sites. 262 sites were counted, and that's out of about 400 that we know have ever been reported to have monarchs. And of that 400, at least 50 of them have probably been completely destroyed through the removal of trees and urbanization. Some of them are in downtown San Francisco. They no longer exist.
Of the 262 sites, I mean, that's the number for last year. What's the usual number, the average in the years before that?
We've kind of had a general uptick. I think the lowest we ever got down to was a little under 100 sites. And then there's been kind of increasing awareness from the public around monarchs. And we get every year we have more people that reach out and want to participate. So we have kind of a train the trainer method where we've got local folks in each county that train new volunteers so that we've got folks on the ground kind of sharing their knowledge of the sites.
So we're talking about sites ranging in the low hundreds and up to 262 last year. Let's talk about the numbers of butterflies then. What turned up this past Thanksgiving monarch count?
Yeah, this was a really tough year. I have to say, as a monarch butterfly biologist almost full time, this is always a little bit hard because we had this great, you know, volunteer turnout, and then we have got to come around and tell people we actually had a really bad year for monarchs. So we had under 200,000 butterflies were counted, and you can compare that to the first year of this count in 1997, where they counted over 1 million monarchs. So we've had a really steep decline since the count began, and a great study looked at data that went back even into the 80s, and they actually found that since the 80s, we've had over 95% decline in the number of monarchs. So in our lifetimes, there's been this dramatic decrease in the number of monarchs that are making it to the coast. And this is really similar to what they've seen in Mexico. So we know the populations are linked. We know some of the monarchs in the West go to Mexico and probably vice versa. So we know that there's some factors out there that are causing this really steep decline in both populations.
I'm looking at the charts in front of me for every year since 1997. That was a huge year with more than 1.2 million monarchs seen, but nothing has come even close to that since that time. I mean, nothing even above half of that. We're talking less than 600,000 in the second year of the Thanksgiving count. Was that first year or two potentially an anomaly, or is it really just about the numbers of the butterflies themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a lot of folks look at that graph and say, well, maybe 1997 was the really, you know, strange year, and it's been stable since. So we actually have looked back at older data, which we have a lot less of because there wasn't this kind of coordinated effort. But we do have some that stretch back to 1980. And so if you look at the 80s, it's even higher than 97 for the most part, comparable or higher. So we actually, the historical estimates are that there were about 10 million monarchs in the 80s and earlier on the coast of California, and then something happened during the 1990s that led to some crash, and then we've kind of continued to have a slow decline into the 2000s, but it just looks a lot less dramatic because you've already had this 95% decline since the 80s.
Yeah, since certainly 2001, it's just sort of wavered around the 200,000 mark, and sometimes lower than that, including this year. We're talking to Emma Pelton at the Xerces Society based in Portland, which looks at invertebrates and their health. We're talking specifically about monarch butterflies. Emma is a conservation biologist in the Endangered Species Program, and as she just mentioned, almost a full-time monarch butterfly biologist. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Anne in Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Thank you. Is there any evidence that GMO crops that, are in it pose any risk to butterflies? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Anne. Appreciate it. GMO crops then.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's one of those things that's got, there's a couple elements to it. So I'll try and break it down. When GMO crops first came on, especially BT corn, which is a natural bacteria that was inserted into the genome of corn to fight off insect pests, there was a lot of concern that that pollen would then float through the air and land on milkweed plants and be ingested by monarchs and cause death or cause kind of sublethal effects. So that kind of raised the alarm, and it's probably why you see a monarch butterfly on the non-GMO labels. A lot of work went into that, and essentially it kind of came down to it's probably not a huge risk. So the chance of this pollen floating on milkweed plants and causing really detrimental effects to monarchs was relatively low. And I think there's still some arguments we made that there are probably some effects we can't pick up on, but that was largely kind of put to rest as not a major issue. But then you kind of fast forward a little bit, and we now have a lot of crops, especially corn and soy, but also cotton and alfalfa, that are genetically modified to withstand large amounts of herbicide. And so this has led to an interesting case where people are now spraying their fields a lot more, and that is kind of removing perennial weeds from the row agriculture landscape. So this is really well documented in the upper Midwest. There was some work right around 2000 where folks went out into cornfields and found tons of milkweed in cornfields. And then with the advent of GMO corn and soy, just 10 years later, pretty much those monarch reliant milkweed plants have dropped to zero. So just in the 2000s, we saw this massive reduction of milkweed in agriculture. So it's kind of an indirect effect on the butterflies. The pesticides and the GMO crops weren't necessarily killing the butterflies directly, but they were removing their habitat. And so it's kind of one of these nuances about GMO crops that I think it can be kind of hard to relate. But yes, I think definitely how we farm, you know, can both benefit milkweed. Tilling often kind of benefits milkweed, and then if we spray a lot of agricultural chemicals, including herbicides that remove milkweed, or insecticides, especially neonicotinoids, can have really negative impacts on a lot of our pollinators, including monarchs.
All right, so you mentioned those tests in the Midwest about higher amounts of herbicides being used on GMO crops that can withstand the herbicide use. What about here? I mean, is it generally suspected that it is habitat loss primarily?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question, and it's actually a debate in the literature a bit. I think monarch scientists are a little bit torn. You know, that's kind of what we have the most evidence for is habitat loss, and we know in the West we do use GMO crops. It's a little less of a blanket than it is if you go to, say, Iowa, where a lot of the studies have been done. We have less of the, you know, giant fields of a single corn or soy crop. We tend to have a lot more crop diversity. But we also have those monocultures. So I think clean farming in general, you know, when you drive through the Central Valley of California and you see really nothing besides the crops that people want to grow growing, that definitely says something about how much habitat there is for other wildlife, including monarchs. And then I think you add on that the pressures of, you know, urban and suburban development and just how much we've kind of taken over the surface of the earth, especially the coast of California and into the Central Valley. Collectively, I think those two factors really do say that, you know, we've lost nectar plants for monarchs, we've lost milkweed for monarchs, we've maybe lost their migratory corridors along rivers. But there are definitely other players, and sometimes, you know, it's just hard to know exactly which factor is the most important. But we know that drought and climate change, the historic drought California just went through, definitely has an impact as well. These wildfires, I think, you know, that's really hard to quantify how many monarchs that affected, if that's burning up areas that have milkweed or areas where monarchs are migrating through late in the season.
Should point out, too, that there have been years that were worse than what you just had. In fact, some awful years like 2009, where it looks like you didn't even get to 100,000. But there had been a steady rise since 2012 that got you well up above close to 300,000, it looks like, in 2015 and 2016. So then the drop again below 200,000 monarchs. I mean, were you hoping that the upward trend would continue and thinking it would?
Well, yeah, and I guess this is one hard thing about this graph that I always try and find a better way to convey. So if you look at the blue line, I guess if you're on the radio, you can't see this.
Right.
So, just to describe it, we have seen kind of this steady, you know, 200 to 300,000 monarchs over really the last, you know, you could say the last 6 to 7 years. But the difference is our effort has been increasing. So the last time we hit this few monarchs, we were only counting about half as many sites. So I actually think, if you think about it, you know, we are counting twice as many sites and we're finding the same number of butterflies, which leads me to conclude that this has been a really bad year.
Was there any place the numbers went up?
There were a few sites where numbers went up, but none of our really large sites. So some of our sites have, you know, 1 to 2 butterflies, and some of our sites have 40,000 butterflies. So I don't like to make averages too often. You know, if a site with 2 butterflies goes to 4 butterflies, it's not a big deal.
Sure.
So that's when we looked at our really big sites, the sites that are really steady and typically do host 20, 30, 40,000 butterflies. Pretty much all of those went down by about half. And that's where we got really concerned this year. Kind of these big, stable sites saw many fewer monarchs. And if you look at proportion of the total population, that's a lot fewer monarchs. If you, you know, carve off that there were 50,000 fewer butterflies at just maybe our top 3 sites combined.
Emma, just a few seconds left. I mean, people are putting out monarch way stations and making pollinator-friendly gardens. Does that give you some hope that we are going to see some more monarchs over time?
I hope so, yeah. I love how enthusiastic people are. I think that is a beautiful thing. It's hard to tell people that we've had this huge collapse in monarchs, but I think the upshot is it gets a lot of people motivated that they can do something. So I think planting, you know, native nectar plants that provide habitat for a lot of our pollinators, planting native milkweed are all great things to do, as well as I think supporting, you know, agriculture that's organic or that, you know, supports habitat for wildlife. So I think thinking about, you know, how we farm and how we spread our cities are important factors when we think about a recovery for the species.
Okay, all kinds of things to think about for bringing monarch butterflies back. Emma Pelton is with the Xerces Society in Portland, conservation biologist, monarch expert. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.